Welcome back to the Upper Tier Podcast, the football podcast we bring you each and every week on the Dynamo Podcast Network. This is your Monday mashup. Kind of a different little flavour here, though, because some of the contenders that normally show up have dropped off the planet. Because just to let our viewers know, we have no WhatsApp, we have no Facebook, and we have no Instagram. The world is about to end. Again, football isn't even important anymore now. People can't access their WhatsApp. But I did have Darren's number, so I got through to Darren. Dino's a bit busy because we did do a Shankly Sessions earlier. So it's myself and Darren tonight. So again, Spotify is probably your option for one side of this podcast and YouTube for the other half. But let's get into this Monday mashup, just the two of us. Just the two of us. Let's run down through the results. Man United 1, Everton 1. Burnley 0, Norwich 0, Chelsea 3, Southampton 1, Leeds 1, Watford 0, Wolves 2, Newcastle 1, Brighton 0, Arsenal 0, which was definitely a shock for both of us that that was a 0-0, Palace 2, Leicester 2, Spurs 2, Villa 1, West Ham 1, Brentford 2, and Liverpool rounding out the weekend 2-2 draw with Man City on the Super Sunday. We'll start with United and Everton. No better place to start. I definitely like that celebration standing behind me, all right. I'm not sure whether I believe the explanation from him after the fact. What was you thinking?
Yeah, like when I seen it, obviously, initially it was like, this bloke's taking the piss here. But then obviously you hear him talk and he talks quite flatteringly about Ronaldo and being one of his idols and stuff, and you're kind of like, is he plumassing here or what's the story, you know? I don't know. I know he hit him up and he got the jersey and stuff a full time, didn't he? As well.
He did, yeah.
So I don't know, maybe there's a little bit of truth in it. I don't think he's a bad guy, Townsend, is he?
No, probably lucky he didn't get a left hook off him with the way Ronaldo stomped off the pitch.
I'd say there might have been a few left hooks getting thrown around the dressing room after it, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
it was gutting, man. Absolutely gutting. You know, it's another subpar performance. It's another performance that's, you know, lacking in so much. And you know, even when you see the team an hour or so before kickoff, you get the team in and you're like scratching your head thinking, right. When you see the team, you kind of think we might be in a bit of bother here. And then, although listening, saying that we had more than enough out on the pitch to beat Everton, but I don't like this change in game to game, you know. And with a lot of the good sides, you could name their starting 11 game to game in the league, and you know, it's at the minute we can't. You know, I know we've a couple of injuries and stuff, but there's an awful lot of chopping and changing in that front line and stuff like that. Guys don't seem to be getting a run of games, which will allow them to build up some momentum, you know. The goal really, really annoyed me, you know, I have to say. I thought Fred was obviously, you know, you're losing a 50-50 to Demarai Gray, you're in trouble. The bloke plays for about the under 14s, he's about 3.5 stone wet, do you know what I mean? And
but a serious footballer who we admire on this,
absolutely,
you know, and who we think is one of the best transfers in the window.
Yeah, we've spoken about, you know, 1.1 million, wasn't it? You know,
1.4 or something like that.
An absolute bargain. But, like, your centre midfielder shouldn't be losing a 50-50 with Demarai Gray. No chance. Absolutely no chance. And you know, he's not built to be taking on centre midfielders, although is Fred built like a centre midfielder? That's another day's work, really. And then as well, I just thought Luke Shaw was so, so poor for it. Like, Decore nutmegs him and just leaves him there, and you're just thinking, Shaw wasn't booked. He's 30 yards from goal. Why doesn't someone just upend the bloke, take the yellow card, and let everybody get back behind the ball and reset? Like, there was two big chances to stop that attack there, you know. And other than that, like, Everton didn't have a serious amount of chances. This was a hit and run sort of thing. United did an awful lot of the pressing, but obviously didn't create enough, you know. But you just think, like, it's so naive that a guy, they break down the pitch like that and nobody is able to stop the attack. Like, you need somebody just willing to pull a jersey or You know, somebody that's just going to trip themselves up and fall over someone, and just start to stop that kind of flow. And just, we don't have lads in there that are like nasty enough for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's nearly a cleverness and an awareness, isn't it, really, of what's unfolding in front of you. And, you know, like, you know, we say we're our own James Milner. You know, he knows when to take the card. He knows when it's needed and stuff like that, you know. But I just think as well, I look at the way that pattern of play flows and the way, like, the ball comes out to whoever it went out. I'm not sure if it was Townsend at the time or whatever. And you're looking, you're waiting for your left back to come back into the picture to mark him. And yet the left back's already over nearly the far side of the pitch. And this whole gaping space between the goal and out to the left side, it is just wide open. And we've seen it a couple of times even with Villarreal, didn't we, at times when they attacked
you? Well, the goal against Villarreal was, you know, everything for me sat with Rafael Varane there. You know, the ball gets popped into the midfield and he goes to try and nip in and take the ball. He gets nowhere near it, but he's left a gaping hole in the back four. So when the ball does go down the left and Danjuma cuts back in, you know, he has Alcacer has a chance to get across the front of Lindelof, and you're just like, this is just, you know, it's so naive at times, and it just
nearly schoolboy.
Like, it is schoolboyish, like, you know, and you're just thinking, is somebody in the background there? Is somebody saying, this is what we need to do, lads? Or this is, you know, commit fouls? Or do, like, there has to be somebody able to say. I was kind of thinking about this on the way home tonight, and I was driving home and the weather was obviously a little bit shitty, but I was just thinking to myself, there's a lot of those players at United that through one thing or another in their game, they're not exactly where they could be, but they're not massive things. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you single out four or five or six players in that United team, you could make them individually better by getting them to work on very small things. Pointing case, Aaron Wan-Bissaka. You know, we know he's a great defender. He can't cross the ball. Why isn't he crossing 50, 60, 70, 100 balls a day until he bends it like Beckham? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's got to be able to work on this.
Yeah, you know, it's not the intricate, difficult stuff. It's more the basic kind of stuff.
Right, like Fred, go and hit a load of 10-yard passes and actually hit them and hit your target. Because we know his work rate is phenomenal. We've said it before. He gets around the pitch, he breaks up play, but he breaks up play and then puts balls out for throw-ins. And you're going, what in there?
I suppose in terms of the goal the other day and the result with Everton, I find it like the one thing I even say to the lads when I'm coaching them, I said, look, we can coach you the fundamentals. We can show you body position. We can show you where you should be, awareness, all that kind of thing. But I can't teach you cleverness. I can't teach you when to take a card. I can't teach you when you need to take a guy out, when you need to put a build in, when it's time to do that. That unfolds in front of you and you have to know in the moment that that's the time to take it. And as you said, Fred could have broke that down easily, no problem at all, like, but didn't. But I just think, like, I did a midterm report on Manchester United with Mark last night. It'll be releasing during the week. When you look at kind of, I know you'll turn around and say, right, well, you're what is it, 2 points off top or a point off top or whatever, it's 2 points, isn't it?
Two, but that's there's no relevance there for me.
But it doesn't tell the story, really, isn't it? The story, when you delve into it and you look at the results and you look at the pattern of plays and you look at people saying that it's Moments FC and you look at those things and you think, that 14 points on another day could be 8 because the Wolves game, you know, Newcastle were in the game, had 2 good chances. They blew them, but then obviously they unloaded and it was 4-1. But you look at other games, the West Ham game, the Southampton draw, you know, loads of games like that where it's on the edge. And I know some people will turn around and say, well, that's a sign of a good team that sometimes even when they're not at their best, they get through it and stuff like that. But it's fair to say, looking at United so far, that till this point, you probably had the handiest draw in the league in terms of fixtures, but you haven't really faced really, you know, a top four or a real, like, you faced Villa and you faced Leeds, you steamrolled Leeds, but you faced Villa and you faced West Ham, and they're obviously the West Ham result was a good result down there, obviously. The Villa result, not so good because you were at home. They're the two best teams you faced. So the problem is, you're going into a run of games now, 7-8 games, where you're going to be facing quality. And at the back end of that, is that really going to tell the tale? Are United going to be able to figure out what these issues are, put together patterns of play that look like a style that you can recognise, that he has, this is how he wants to play, pick up the points that you need to pick up, or are you going to be like let adrift? And is that going to be a huge problem? I mean, I suppose what I'm asking at the moment is, I understand where you're coming from. Ali had to come in. It was toxic with Jose. He had to kind of dampen down the culture. He had to set a scene. He had to make everyone happy again and figure out how to get things going. Has reached a couple of semi-finals and the final hasn't worked out for him and stuff like that. But in order for United to win something, is he going to be the man that will get them over that line?
At the moment, you'd have to say it's looking unlikely. And I don't like saying that, you know, because obviously if we're talking about that, we're kind of saying, like, you know, we're not necessarily saying Ollie out, but we're saying for United to take the next step, we need to freshen it up again, maybe, and get new ideas in there, because the squad that we have at our disposal is, for me, it's right up there with the other squads in the league as one of the best squads going, you know. But like you said, the patterns of play and the moments thing, you know, we're not going out and steamrolling teams. We're giving teams way too, like, we're coughing. We haven't had a clean sheet, I think someone said, since February or something.
Last nine games at home, you've conceded.
You know, when you're like, we played a lot of bog standard football teams who have no right to come and necessarily, we're in Old Trafford. And yeah, we've always conceded goals at Old Trafford because we're always able to score goals. And it was a little bit like, you score one or two, we'll score three or four. And it's been like that at United for a number of years. But, you know, Ferguson always talked about goals and win your games, clean sheets and win your league titles. And at the minute, we're not going to be in the shake-up for the league title because of A, the clean sheets, and because of B, we don't have that kind of that pattern of play that, you know, is scaring teams or is playing teams off the park. Or, you know, when you look at the game yesterday, Liverpool and Man City, like, I'm going to see the United-Liverpool game in a few weeks, and I'm already kind of thinking, Jesus, this could be a tough day at the office. You know, and we see you a couple of weekends after that, and again, it's another game where you just think, geez, these boys could do serious damage to Tart. Now, here's the thing, and this is what's happened previously, and I won't be shocked if it happens again. Every time he's looked like he was in trouble, every time he was like a cat with nine lives, we turn City over, we turn Chelsea over, we turn someone else over. Yeah. And to be honest, I understand why that happens a little bit, because obviously when you go and play against City, they go and play to win the game. When we're playing against Everton didn't go and play to win that game on Saturday. They came thinking if they could get away with a point and get out of there, they'd be happy as Larry, as Rafa would. They played quite defensively. They played in the counter-attack. Man City won't come to Old Trafford and play like that. Liverpool won't come to Old Trafford and play like that. And that may suit us more because we're in a game. Whereas at the minute, again, it's those lower teams in the table where we're struggling to break teams down. But also, you can't keep conceding goals to these teams, you know.
Yeah, I think when you look at the top four contenders, when you look at the likes of Chelsea, ourselves, and Man City, you know, it's very evident to see how we play. The difficulty is stopping it. But you'll know what you get. I mean, like, it's not going to be any surprise to Solskjaer or Man United when Liverpool rock up there on the 24th. How we're going to set up, how we're going to play, and what our game plan is.
Yeah.
I suppose when you are playing the likes of Everton and Aston Villa and West Ham and teams like that, they can try and change their style to get something out of the game, which becomes very difficult. I mean, we've spoken about Burnley before, when you go to Turf Moor and you get two banks of four and it's like the Great Wall of China trying to burst through it.
Yeah. Kind
of thing. And I get that. But in terms of, like, there's a lot of rumblings going around at the moment. You've got Ronaldo now. It's leaking out that he's had a word about how he wants the team to play for him to get more goals and stuff like that. And, you know, there's different sort of rumblings coming out. That one is, well, that's what Ronaldo was brought in for, to raise the profile of the club and raise the profile of the players and show them that this is the United winning way and this is how we're supposed to play. The other rumbling would say, well, how does that leak out? Why isn't that a private conversation between him and Ronaldo? And we know in the past that when these things start leaking out, it tends to only go down one road.
Yeah, but I've also got to remember how easy it is for something to be leaked, you know? Like, that can be Johnny Bullshit down the road writing a story, and all of a sudden it's a leak, and it's we're hearing from within the club. So I don't necessarily think that sort of stuff, although I'm not necessarily saying it's untrue, it doesn't always carry the weight. I think people can put two and two together and get six sometimes.
I think Ollie addressed it, didn't he? I mean, Ollie turned around and said he was going to be talking to Cristiano about it. So it doesn't sound from the information that's come out that it's untrue. It just, normally with United, those things are generally kept pretty tight. Maybe not so much in recent times, but in general, if you think about the culture of Man United.
Yeah. Yeah, and I suppose, but you've also got to remember that was under the iron fist of Fergie, you know, because since Fergie left, it has been a free-for-all. You've heard guys coming out and speaking out against this manager and that manager. And also you've got the likes of the class in 92, and then you've got Ferdinand, and you know, you've all these other ex-United players that are now pundits that give their tuppence worth every time they're asked, basically, because, you know, paper doesn't refuse ink, does it, either? You know, so there's an awful lot of that going around. Don't get me wrong, I like Gary Neville, I like Rio, and, you know, you would value their opinions, but you've also got to say, let the guy at it, and if we want to discuss it, maybe we discuss it after, or you know, that type of thing. Whereas when everybody seems to get involved, you just think this is a bit of a circus type thing. At the minute, I believe we're probably going to play a different style of play against the likes of Hughes and City, because he has played three at the back and got results, be it draws away from home or be it wins away from home or wins at home. When we come up against like City and Liverpool, I wouldn't be surprised to see him go to a back three and use Sean Wan-Bissaka as wing back to try and pack the midfield and play Cavani and Ronaldo up front. Because I think it's, you know, it's plausible. I think, you know, we spoke about it a few weeks ago, and the lads obviously talk about Brentford going to play Liverpool and playing two players up front gave them a little more trouble than the natural one and the two out wide and stuff like that. So again, like there's options to what you can do, but my fear is he just goes and does what he does every game. And then we don't, you know what I mean? That he won't see that there's other options, and he won't say, do you know what, maybe play three at the back, like a pack the midfield, try and keep it nice and tight, get the two boys playing, pressing high up against the back. You know what I mean? There's options, like with the squad we have, you could play three or four or five different formations, but he doesn't. He plays the same formation every time. And you know, yeah, okay, we're not a small team that we maybe want to go week to week changing tactics. But you've got to have option B, option C. We talk about tactical geniuses and, you know, coaches with some tactical nous. He does show himself up a little bit to being a little bit naive like that, and maybe not covering himself in glory from that point of view, because, you know, he doesn't seem to tactically know, or well, maybe he knows, but maybe the message isn't getting across. Yeah, maybe that's the issue.
I think when you look at McTominay and Fred, he's clear that he stands by his judgment. To a fault and to a mistake. He's slow to accept when he's gotten something wrong or when he's got a formation wrong. He tends to blaze over it. But then the frustration, I suppose, in the fan base is that he comes back next week and it's more of the same.
That's typically what's happened.
Yeah, and it's like as if he's waiting for that McTominay-Fred combination or whatever it is to suddenly click and look amazing and be world-class, and then he's going to go, I told you so. But I don't see it happening.
No, and I mean, you could say that about any position on the pitch, and you know what I mean? Like, but you've got to, surely to God, and I say this week to week, surely somebody as part of the backroom staff, like, don't tell me Michael Carrick isn't watching Donny van de Beek in training saying, Gaffer, this kid needs to play ball here. Do you know what I mean? Like somebody's got to be saying something somewhere. If it's Kieran McKenna, if it's Fletcher, if it's Carrick, like, can they all be missing, you know, this very, very obvious, or are we all the ones that are, you know, living on cloud cuckoo land? Now, we've seen him play in the EFL in the Carabao last week against West Ham. The kid looked like he was ready to start going at teams. And again, he hasn't seen the light of day since. And you just think, Jesus, man, like Fred coughs up, okay, you know, maybe doesn't cough up the goal the weekend, but he plays a big part in it. you know, and maybe if it's Donny, maybe puts him into Rosehead and takes the yellow card and goes, there you are, lads, I broke that attack up. Do you know what I mean? But if you don't give the guy a chance, it's certainly not going to happen. I think he needs a run of games. I think there's a couple of lads needs a run of games. I'd be an advocate to see Jesse Lingard get a run of games and Jadon Sancho.
Well,
you know.
Well, I suppose, as you said, it's very hard to develop a system or a pattern of play if you're constantly changing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen it at Spurs, how often they change their back line and stuff like that, and it comes back to bite them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people will say, yeah, well, you have to use a squad and stuff like that, but it's the timing of it. You know what I mean? It's like you're throwing crap at the wall and you're trying to get it to stick. And I just think, you know, some of his decisions are just very strange, but we won't dwell on it much longer. But I think this run of seven or eight games now is going to be absolutely pivotal in his career. And this could go south very quickly if he doesn't get a stranglehold on it.
If he gets a hold on the results, but not necessarily the performances, does that leave us in the same position for, you know, January, February, when things maybe dip again, or, you know what I mean? Well, like, if we end up getting the points in the next seven or eight games, that's necessary, let's say.
Yeah.
If after the next eight games, we're still in the top two or three, and we're a step closer to qualifying the Champions League, is the garden all rosy again?
No, well, you see, the thing about it is, because he has signed the players that he signed, and as you said, you have the squad that's there built up to compete. And I mean, obviously, the likes of Ronaldo coming back into the Premier League, it's a different Premier League than when he was there. Varane having to adjust into it. We've seen the trouble that Sancho has had trying to adjust. It's going to take time. We know he's a world-class player, but we know it's going to take time. So it's hard in that frame of mind as well to turn around and expect that you just go out and sort. I mean, we see it with Messi at PSG as well. One of the greatest players ever, if not the greatest player ever, between himself and Ronaldo. And like, he's having a torrid time at PSG because it's a different world.
And that's a league that's streets away from the Premier League. Don't forget. You know?
Absolutely. So I just think it does take time, a little bit of settling down. I think the loss of Maguire is huge, and it's only when you don't have him you can see how massive it is. When he's there, people don't actually realise the impact that he has.
Yeah. But I think at the end of last season, actually, the exact same thing, because obviously he missed a couple of games coming up through the Europa.
Yeah.
And I think United fans all of a sudden went, do you know what? That bloke we give an awful lot of stick to every week, he's not bad, actually.
Yeah.
You know? And you were like, of course he's not bad. Like, you know, he's our captain. He can see on the pitch he's a leader.
Yeah.
You know, whether you like him or you don't like him, the guy's a leader and he's a talker and he's trying to get guys all pulling in the one direction. And that for a side like United is important, because you've got all of these big names and these big egos, you know?
Yeah, so look, we'll see when we get back off the international break how it starts to progress. And I suppose the thing about it is, with the United fan base at the moment as well, is not only are they looking at the results now, but they want a certain style of play. They've signed these players, and just getting over the line against a West Ham, getting a draw against Everton, losing against Villa, you know, struggling against a Villarreal, but just getting over the line, it doesn't really satisfy the fan base, although they'll take the result. But the result is not the be-all and end-all. You know, everyone talks about the United way.
And here's the other thing. You know, it's not necessarily for me a goals thing, because you can absolutely thump a team and play really, really good football, but only scrape a 2-1 win. But you know, coming off the park on another day when you got 5 or 6 there, we don't look like that. You know, like, we are creating chances, but they're wouldn't what I say, they're not what I would say are clear-cut chances. And then even at that, there's a little bit of snatching and stuff like that, because obviously there's that nervousness about, you know, maybe not taking the lead in enough games, and we always seem to have to come behind, and it's a mess, really.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying the same thing about Liverpool. They were creating loads of chances, they just weren't converting them. But I did say that someone's going to be on the back of a hiding, and then we went out and we absolutely thumped Porto, you know?
Yeah.
Let's move on. Burnley, Norwich, not much to talk about there. Poor game, really. Just Norwich picking up their first point of the season, I suppose. So maybe they can kick on from here now, but I kind of doubt it, really.
Yeah. I wouldn't put any money on it, put it that way.
Yeah. Chelsea 3, Southampton 1. So Chelsea back to winning ways after a bad result against Man City and a bad result against Juventus. So good to see them back at it again. But I think the sending off was pivotal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I was watching a bit of that game, and, you know, Southampton were really in that game. It's bonkers from Ward-Prowse, to be honest with you. after scoring the goal, you know, to get them back in it 1-0. The rain is coming down. They're in the game. You're thinking this is ideal for Southampton. They'd love this, you know, nice and dogged, bit of a dog fight. And when the ball went into Jorginho, I was just going, whoa, what have you just done? Like, it was just mental. Like, because he's a good footballer, the kid, James Ward-Prowse. Really good footballer. He's got one of the best deliveries in that league. And you're just thinking, why are you putting a tackle in like that high up the pitch? It's different if it's on the edge of your 18-yard box. But not when you're trying to press. Like, you don't need to be tackling like that pressing. And that, for me, was nailing the coffin at that stage then. Because I didn't think with 10 men they were going to be able to hold out, you know. Although McCarthy tried his best and he had a decent game in the Southampton goal. It was always just going to be a bit too much. They had them overrun in the wider areas. And then Lukaku got a bit of space up front and was able to start putting balls in around himself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Leeds won, Watford nil. Leeds picking up a clean sheet. I was shocked at this.
That was as big a shock of the weekend as anything for me, now I have to say. Because obviously we'd spoken about the boy Sarr and the boy Emmanuel Dennis and stuff like that. Well, shocked Leeds managed to get the clean sheet. And then, you know, you just look at what happened at Watford then. And I think football fans in general will be happy to see Ranieri back. But there's also got to be, like, you've got to look at the guy who's gone and go, he's been hard done by as well, hasn't he? You know, Cisco Munoz, isn't it? He's like,
yeah.
They've had 17 managers in 10 years. Why would anyone take a job there? That's just, do you know what I mean? Okay, you're going to get a payoff, but do you need money that badly? Like, because you know that's the culture at their club. And that's, like, for me, it's kind of mercenary-like.
Yeah.
You know, you're going in there for a payday, but you're leaving in 6 or 8 months, but we'll pay you up for 2 years. Mm. It's strange. I don't know what the fan base thinks of it. I don't think there's many Watford fans floating around Dublin now, to be honest with you. But it's just, I look at it and I just think, Jesus, Watford have been doing all right, playing some decent football, you know.
Mm.
And your man gets the chopping and all of a sudden it's next. Mm. I think football could do without it, to be honest with you. A little rant there.
It's probably safe to say that Ranieri won't pull a Leicester with Watford. That's nailed on, isn't it?
I think that's nailed on. Yeah. Well, listen, don't forget, what was his first season at Leicester? Was keeping them in the league, wasn't it?
Yeah, but if you're talking about this being a 6 or an 8 month project to just try and solidify them and keep them up, but then I think he'd be gone.
If he keeps them up, he's won, you know? And I wouldn't be surprised to see him keep them up because I think there's a little bit of talent in that squad. You know, like if you look at the likes of Norwich, they haven't got the attacking threat and the quality that Watford have, you know, for me. So if anyone was going to out of the three teams maybe that come up, I know obviously Brentford have gone really kicked on well this year so far. But I think Watford were better equipped than Norwich were anyway for my money. And maybe even some of the Premier League teams, you know, the likes of Burnley and Newcastle.
Yeah, I think I made a bold prediction at the start of the year and, I probably got it wrong in some respects, but I thought that potentially the three teams that came up might stay up and we might lose three Premier League teams. But I don't know. Looking at Norwich now, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they will struggle.
Yeah, but I mean, if two of those three stayed up, that'd be a big season for the promoted teams.
Well, I think Brentford are nailed on to be safe, aren't they, with the pattern of play?
They should. Yeah, they should, yeah.
They look the part.
Yeah.
Wolves 2, Newcastle 1.
El Brucey, how has he not gone yet?
The hinges on the door are creaking, aren't they?
But they came out and backed him and said, no, he's the man for the job. And now, listen, I know that's the kiss of death usually, but I couldn't believe he hadn't gone before the international break, because I had said to you last week, I think Wolves will win this, and I said I think it'll be the end of Brucey in the preview.
Yeah.
And we got the first part right, but the boys have got an awful lot of patience by the looks of it.
Well, it's either that or Watford beat them to the chase for Ranieri.
maybe. That's although would you think theory. would you think that was a Newcastle signing Ranieri?
I wouldn't mind seeing him in there because he's good at organising, but the problem is you're going to get a slight bump, aren't you, when he comes in? You'd expect Watford potentially looking at their fixtures. I'm not too sure, but they might get a slight bump, maybe a couple of draws and a win or something like that.
Yeah.
But then he'll start doing, he'll revert back to form and he'll start tinkering. And that's here's
this crazy thing. Would you be surprised to see them sack him before the end of the season and try and get another bump to keep them up?
Jesus. Yeah.
That's, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's very plausible. March, April, just maybe March, mid to late March. El Claudio shown the door. Somebody comes in, maybe a big Sam, someone like that. You've 10 games there. We need 15 points. Off you go. Because they'll get the initial bump from Ranieri plus what Munoz got himself, you know.
Although I think the West Brom situation with Big Sam hasn't done him a good stead at all with what came out and everything. Sure hasn't.
Yeah, well.
I know he's been the man for keeping teams up, but like he blistered West Brom, didn't he? Really, he washed his own hands of responsibility there and laid it right at the door of the club, like, you know.
Well, like, listen though, if I'm a fan, do I want to know what's going on in a club? Maybe, because you know, at the end of the season, like, the manager's going to be shown the door either way. The fans are going to be still there next season, and it's going to be the same old, if someone's not doing what they're supposed to be doing, i.e., you know, targets and whatnot behind, you know. So I don't know. It's I think Sam was right, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but like you know, from a footballing point of view, you have to take a little bit of responsibility, and he didn't really. He washed his hands of it, you know.
I understand that part of it, and you know what I understand it, but I suppose from my point of view, I'm just. The manager's always wrong, isn't he? You know, because the club say they were right, and do you know what I mean? Yeah. We know what goes on at committee levels and stuff like that in clubs, and even in amateur clubs, let alone Premier League clubs. So you can only imagine the sort of stuff that's going on there, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Brighton 0, Arsenal 0. Horrible evening.
Yeah. Good result for Arsenal, I think.
Yeah, I would think so, but. God, they were poor, weren't they, on the back of that North London derby win. I mean, Aubameyang was anonymous. The weather was horrific as well. And I'm not blaming the weather either.
No.
I just think it was a horrible night for football, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I don't think anyone's going to enjoy going down there this season, are they? With how kind of well-drilled and, you know, how tight Brighton are, you know. I think I've said it already, I think Potter's doing an amazing job with them. You know, so yeah, I think it's a good result for Arsenal. I think they get out with a clean sheet at that point, and it keeps everything moving in the right direction. You know, it's something for Arteta to build on. I don't think Arsenal fans 3 or 4 weeks ago would have believed you were going to go and tump Brighton anyway. So a nil-all draw is as good as they were probably going to expect for me.
They were worried about tumping Burnley and Norwich at that stage.
Do you know? Well, yeah, 2-1-0s, weren't they?
Yeah.
So.
Palace 2, Leicester 2. Rodgers absolutely crapping the bed again.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it, at Leicester? And he's someone we talked about, obviously. I've certainly mentioned him when we've spoken about United and what might happen there. And I'd love to see him at United, but he's not doing himself any favours at the minute, obviously. Now, listen, I think he's still, and I actually heard him, we spoke about it last week in the preview, and he came out and basically said exactly what we had said in the preview, which was he doesn't know his best 11. You know, and he's still finding, he said, we brought in a lot of players in the summer, and he said, we're still trying to find out how to fit those in and get the best out of those players, you know. It's a nice job to have, but it doesn't make it any easier when you're trying to pick a team and, you know, but listen, they should have been home and dry by halftime. They had enough chances.
You know what the fix is to it? You're down in 13th at the moment. You've probably had the worst start ever in the league for a Leicester team. Go back and play your original 11 and bench the guys that you brought in for the moment and get some points on the board. That's what you go when you do.
Yeah. I don't think he has everything at his disposal at the minute, though, does he? Because there's a lot of injuries, especially in that back line.
Yeah.
You know, the kid, Fofana, he's an absolute baller. Like, massive loss. You know, any team loses him, you're like, whoa. And he's also had to play without Johnny Evans. So he's been in with Soyuncu and Vestergaard. Now, Vestergaard was a last-minute sort of a, we need to get a body in here because the boys are dropping like flies.
But also a very good player.
He is a good player, but I think he'd be the worst of the four there. You know, I wouldn't have him ahead of Siuncio, Evans, or Fofana. He is a decent player. But
and I suppose with Vieira and Palace at the moment, he's getting his act together, isn't he?
He is. I thought he'd do all right at Palace. You know, I did say that in the prediction start of the season. When he's all tipped him to go down, I think Vieira will do all right. I couldn't imagine being a complete failure there, because I think he brings an awful lot to a job like Palace. You know, if you think of some of them players, they've got to be saying, "We're playing for Patrick Vieira." Do you know what I mean? Like, what a footballer. Like, in Premier League times, he's right up there with the absolute best, what we've seen from a midfield point of view, you know. And I think he's got a nice crop of young players there at Palace. There's a lot of quality. You've got the boy Conor Gallagher. You've Zaha, who, you know, is a top player.
Plenty of experience at a
smaller club. The boy Edwards hit the ground running since he came in from Celtic. The boy Michael Olise, he came from Reading, but he's flying as well. They're still missing Eberechi Eze from last year, who was one of their best performers last year as well. So when he gets everyone fit and healthy and on the pitch, I think Palace will be all right. You're probably looking at the top half of the bottom for them, aren't you? That was kind of 11th to 14th.
Somewhere around that.
Somewhere in there. After losing Roy Hodgson, who was, you know, Hodgson, for all his failings as a, you know, from an excitement point of view, he knew how to get results and how to pick up points in that league, and his experience was vital for keeping Palace there. I think if they could solidify this year and add a couple in the summer, Vieira's in a good shape, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Spurs 2, Villa 1. Dean Smith with more work to do, kind of stop-start. Nuno back to winning ways. It's all good at White Hart Lane again. They don't need to sack him. The world is all bright again.
It's a great win for Spurs, I have to say. Yeah. Didn't fancy them at all. Son was unbelievable. Really, really unbelievable, because Kane was still dragging his heels and huffing and gruffing, you know. Son was really, really good for me, I have to say. And they looked a little bit better in midfield, Spurs. I like the lad Hallberg, you know, he's a good footballer. But he really stepped up the weekend, not only with the goal, but with his performance there to kind of screen that back four for them.
It's a strange one when I looked at it. I mean, it was his goal and an OG that decided.
Yeah.
So it would still lead you to believe there's a lot of work to do there. And I think Villa as well, looking at the stats of the game as well, Villa were poor, weren't they?
They seem to get to a certain point in the pitch. You know, they got two thirds of the way up the pitch and stuff started to break down.
Ran out of ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't necessarily think the two up front suits them very, very well. Because they're not getting the sort of width and they're not getting the ball into the box the way they did last season, because they obviously played with one up front and with two lads tucking in from the sides. Now, don't forget, they've lost Jack Grealish. It's going to leave a hole in any team. But they still got some good players there. John McGinn was excellent. Absolutely excellent. He is week on week, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think he's a top footballer. I'd be shocked if he doesn't end up somewhere. If not next summer, the year after. You know, maybe even one of the top six teams. Could you see him there? Possibly.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I suppose our expectation would be with the players that Villa have brought in, we would expect them to potentially be a top six team.
Yeah, it's not easy, obviously, but because of the budgets they're going up against, you know, is it easy to say, or is it right to say that Villa should be up there in the top six when they're fighting with the likes of City, Chelsea and United from a budgetary point of view? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I suppose if you separate them as top four and then you say there's two more spaces, so those two more spaces are going to be West Ham, Leicester, Villa,
Spurs, Arsenal.
Tottenham, Spurs and Arsenal. That's really it, isn't it? Now, I know Brentford is hovering, but I mean, you know, that would be the miracle season, really, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it would. But yeah, no, it's trying to get up there and get into those top six. You do need a little bit of luck as well. Although I do like Dean Smith, I have to say, and I think Phil have a great squad. I just think it's probably a little bit out of their reach at the minute, you know? But I wouldn't say it's not something they can do going forward, you know what I mean? Another couple of additions here and there.
Yeah. West Ham 1, Brentford 2. We can't talk enough about Thomas Frank and Brentford, can we? I mean, it's just
brilliant, doesn't it?
They never give up, sure they don't. They just never give up for the man. It's amazing to see it. Like,
and that's for me, that's the absolute infuriating thing about United. Like, what would Thomas Frank do with a squad of players that like United have? That'd be scary for my money, because he's a coach. He's a technical coach, and he's working, you know, you can see he's tactical and fundamental, and, you know, everything is meticulous with him.
It's like what you said earlier about Wan-Bissaka, isn't it? He'd have him do 50, 60 crosses a day, wouldn't he? He's meticulous. Do you know what I mean? He's a driller, like, isn't he?
You pick five or six, you know, you pick everyone in the squad. Here's things you need to do. You know, Marcus Rashford, stop going by the same bloke four times. Be more direct. Get into the box. You know what I mean? Fred, learn how to hit 5 and 10 yard passes. You know, Luke Shaw, stop. Okay, we know you can cross the ball. Don't keep getting caught out the back. You know what I mean? You're a left back as well. Wan-Bissaka, learn to cross it. David De Gea, use the ball better with your feet. But like, every one of those lads in that team could do something better, which would add 5 or 10%, you know, to the team. Which is the difference. Like, how someone hasn't just told Paul Pogba, when you get fouled and you don't get the free, get back up and win the ball back. Stop trying to bleed and hissy fit in the ground.
Yeah, I look at Brentford at the moment, and they're an absolute joy to watch, because I'm looking at them and every single player on the pitch knows their job.
Yeah.
And I think that's the sign of an absolute world-class coach, when every player knows their job.
The recruitment, which has been excellent, by the way, and they have a particular way of doing it, you know. I think they're quite analytical, aren't they? About how they buy players in and stuff like that. But, you know, they haven't spent millions. It's like that kind of a money ball. I need assists. I need goals. I need clean sheets. I'm going to piece together the puzzles. And the coach is just, he's working wonders. He really, really is. I think, again, he's another man probably destined for a big job over the next few years if he keeps up.
Yeah, absolutely. A fair play to him, and long may it continue. I like when those teams do well. I like when they've put in the hard work, the coaching's put in the hard work, and you can see it on the pitch, the drive, the determination, the 100% to win every ball, shy away from nothing, walk through a wall and die for each other on the pitch. And I love to see that. Long may it continue.
Yeah.
Let's round out the weekend. Liverpool 2, Man City 2. Safe to say, a game of two halves.
Yeah, they were phenomenal. It was a phenomenal game, really, for me, you know. Obviously, maybe didn't enjoy it as much watching it as a United fan, because you're watching two of the best teams in the league, you know, and you're kind of thinking, Jesus, is this where we want to be? And absolutely it is, but at the minute we can't live with City or Liverpool. Not in a squad sense of point, you know, but from a footballing point, they're miles ahead of us at the minute.
It's a coaching, isn't it? It's a coaching thing, isn't it? That's what it boils down to.
I keep coming back to it. The biggest fear I have with Liverpool is that Jurgen Klopp stays for another 4 or 5 years. It's not necessarily that they keep hold of players, you know, because I firmly believe if Mane left, if Salah left, he'd replace them, you know, and he may not spend millions, but he'd create a team again. And that was something maybe that Fergie was able to do. He was able to, you know, rejuvenate a squad, and he always got the best out of players. Jurgen Klopp gets the best out of his players. Pep Guardiola gets the best out of his players, you know, and it is absolutely a coaching thing for me. The lads all look like they know what the manager wants. They know, you know, in certain patterns of play, you know, when Mo gets the ball, Mo goes left, I go right. You know, does that happen to United? It doesn't look like it to me. If Bruno's breaking down the pitch with the ball at his feet, and if Bruno takes the ball to the left side of the box, does the striker know, I need to move to the right-hand side of the box because now there's a natural angle for the ball to come into me? Or do I run where Bruno's running and get in his way, or and maybe even stymie him? Do you know what I mean?
It's never more prevalent than if you go back and you look at that Mane goal. Yep. That Mane goal is the epitome of positioning and coaching and drilling. And everyone knew once this ball breaks, this is where it's going to go. Everyone knew where to be. And to look at it, Dino sent in an aerial view of it today, I think, into one of the WhatsApp groups. And when you look at it from that aerial view, it's absolutely the most simplistic goal you'll ever see being scored, but absolutely brilliant as well. Like,
yeah, and this is something I would talk about, obviously, in work and stuff like that. You know, you need to work on something and you need it to have worked a number of times before it's going to work on a pitch. Mm. You know, I'm working on those 3v3s where you've got 3 attackers and 3 defenders, and the moves that they make and the patterns that they create. Like, again, at times you're gonna know what's going to happen, but it's stopping it is the difficulty, because if it's done properly, it can be unstoppable. I mean, you know, him taking the step across into the left-hand side for Salah, obviously he came in from the right-hand channel, and the way he moved towards the centre of the pitch meant he created space somewhere. And then Mane moves across. It's just very, very clever. And again, it's not something that we naturally see at United. You know, Ronaldo gets the ball at his feet. He looks up. There's nobody ahead of him, right? There's, you know, you're maybe waiting on Greenwood to make some sort of a move where he's going to tuck in from that right-hand side, or if it's Martial to come in from the left-hand side. But it doesn't happen. You know, they seem to be hanging out waiting on the ball to come to feet and for guys to go and start beating players again. But they've got into a position where the right ball is going to put them in position. Don't stay out and don't hang out of it. Like, you're only going to score goals from inside the width of those posts. Get inside the width of the posts more often. And that's what it seems to me like the Liverpool team do very, very well. There's always someone inside the width of the post of them, be it, if it's not Mane, it's Jota. If it's not Jota, it's Salah. If it's not Salah, it's Firmino. Someone's always in there inside the width of the post. And I think that's the thing that City are missing. You know, because for all our play and build up, City again look like their shortest striker. They get the balls in areas. Foden picks up the ball on the left hand side, looks up, whips a ball in. Hold on, we don't have a striker. You know?
He's also trying to accommodate a star signing as well, isn't he? You think Grealish is playing up the middle, but you know, didn't have a huge influence on the game at all. Foden was outstanding yesterday, obviously.
But Foden was very good.
Grealish up the middle is not an answer, is it? I mean, he's a winger, isn't he?
He's either going to be a 10 or he's going to play wide left like that, which is his favourite position for me. I think you're going to get the best out of Jack Grealish when you don't necessarily play him in this position, when there's a little bit of fluidity of movement. But I think the same with Foden. I think Foden needs to be able to go and move around and play off that. But I mean, you can play Foden and Grealish behind or flanking a striker, you know, and then you've still got Kevin De Bruyne in behind and Rodri and Bernardo Silva, who had a super game for City in there. You know, the big ringer for me is obviously, you know, Gabriel Jesus. So just, he's a head scratcher for me. Really, really is. I think from a work rate point of view, we can see what he brings to the team. But from a quality point of view, I mean, like, you're talking about Bernardo Silva, Kevin De Bruyne, Phil Foden, Jack Grealish. This guy shouldn't be sharing a dressing room with them lads. You know, and that might sound harsh, but you know, he's not what City need going through the middle of the pitch. Not at all. And for all his work, his quality is, he's very short on quality for my money.
Yeah, I think more often than not, he'll come up shy for you, won't he, than actually deliver.
And yeah,
that's the real problem in terms of consistency.
Yeah, he's not, like, he's never going to get you 30 goals a season, is he? And if you can't score 30 goals a season in that Man City team, like, I think me and you will give scoring 30 goals a season a shot with the service you get from those boys.
Anything less than 25 is a failure nearly, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it is, you know, and he doesn't fill me with confidence. Now, listen, I think he does bring something to the side, but it's not necessarily what you're looking for from your striker. And I know people are saying he plays from the right now. He's doing that false nine. I think they look a much better team when the boy Torres plays as the false nine. You know, I think he looks much better because he looks genuinely dangerous when he gets the ball at his feet. He moves well with the ball. He glides over the ground. His peripheral vision is very good. He's putting balls here and there. And he's probably a better finisher as well, for my money.
And has that bit of cleverness about him as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Jesus looks like it doesn't come to him naturally. He's having to overthink it a lot. Whereas Fernando Torres, he kind of sees things at times.
seems to be an awful lot of those Brazilians like that recently. You know, because for years, like, everybody wanted Brazilians in their teams because they were, you know, they were clever and they had beautiful technique and they could score these wonderful goals and do this and that. And now we seem to have gotten this like,
well, I think
bog standard Brazilians. Like,
do you know what it is? It's not even that. I think on the European side of things, I think it works well for you because you get the space and the time. You know, if you're playing in Spain or you're playing in France or you're playing in Germany or places like that, you get that bit more time. I think when you come to the Premier League, you don't get that time. You're just upended. And you can see it with Jesus as well. He wants more time to do what he wants to do and he just gets smothered. Yeah. And I think that's his problem.
I do, just on the Man City thing, got to say, I'm a massive fan of the boy, João Cancelo.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just absolute quality, you know. Really, really good. Listen, I'm not saying he doesn't make mistakes, but I just think as a footballer, you want him in your team. He's oozing with quality. He dribbles with the ball well. He passes it well. He's got a good eye for goal for a defender. His distribution is good. His delivery is good. I just think all over the park, he's...
Yeah, I think his vision of what's in front of him and what's unfolding is outstanding. I think he sees it, you know, kind of way. And I think that's... I don't even know if that's something you can train. That's something that you
that's what we talked about earlier, isn't it? You know, that's something you can't coach at times. You've either got that or you don't. And he's a really, really good footballer. He was a great addition. And to think they were able to get him in a swap deal for Danilo was, you know, that's serious. Another serious bit of business, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to some hot topics. Gary Neville came out. He said Man City would walk the Premier League if they had got Harry Kane. I think he's probably preaching to the converted, really, isn't he? Because you can imagine how many goals Harry Kane would get in that.
He is with me anyway. Yeah, absolutely. I think with the addition of a Kane or a leading number nine, I think they'd be battering teams. I really think they'd be killing teams. You know, so yeah, for me. I'll have to go with Carry on this one.
Yeah, I think he's created a career out of stating the obvious at times, so, hasn't he? Let's talk about Bernard Tapie. He passed away at the age of 78. He was the former president of Olympique Marseille, so we just said we put that out there. I want to give you your props here tonight about West Ham. You told me and you called it that West Ham, and twice they've done it now, have struggled after their Thursday endeavours in football.
Yeah.
And it's been a great show from you, because you've called it both times as well. And both times it's worked out. So I said I'd give you a props tonight because you've called that one twice. So it's really
thank nice you. Stage, no?
Tuchel came out, just one on Saul Niguez. He says Saul's time will come. He's kind of protecting the player at the moment who's had probably a difficult start to his career at Chelsea, who came in with a big reputation, expected to be an absolute baller. We were huge fans of this lad coming in.
Yeah.
I certainly wanted him at Liverpool, but he went to Chelsea. What you thinking on that? I mean, we know Tuchel's very good at man management.
Yeah, he is really good. He is a great man manager, you know, but this is a classic case for me of foreigner coming into the Premier League and not being able to play at that kind of pace, you know. We know Spain is probably slightly more tactical than England, but it's certainly the pace was and physicality of it. And a lot of players come to that league having been big stars elsewhere and do nothing. And vice versa, guys come in that hadn't got big reputations anywhere and look like ballers because they've got that work rate, they've got that physicality and stuff like that. He put him in, he played 45 minutes, didn't he, in the first game and took him off at halftime.
Yeah.
He was a fish out of water. He could see he wasn't ready for it. And he's taking him out. And he's probably going to give him, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. I think the international break will probably help him. Because I don't think he's in the Spanish squad, if I'm right. And they'll keep building him up and they'll keep getting him ready. They'll have him on some sort of a strength and conditioning training that they're looking to maybe add a couple of kilos maybe and get him a little bit bulkier so he can look after himself in there, because I don't think the quality of the boy is in question, but I think physically and even mentally, you know, you've got to be a little bit sharper in there than you may be doing in Spain, where you get an extra touch, you know, But I think would I take him at United in a heartbeat. So you know, I think given time, we'll probably see him flourish.
Yeah, I suppose he was coming in with a reputation that, like, you're coming in from Atletico. And if you look at Atletico in terms of the European leagues and the European teams, Atletico in terms of their doggedness and their intensity and their battling would be the closest to the Premier League, if you think about it. Because every other one plays kind of lovely, flowing football and stuff like that. Whereas Atletico is more dogged and harsh in their approach.
Well, they're far more pragmatic. But that doesn't necessarily mean they have the pace of play and that they play in a league that can challenge a player like that, you know? I just think in that Spanish league and in that Italian league, there's lads at times can just coast by because of the pace of play. Whereas when they come to somewhere like the Premier League, they'll go, whoa, this is a little bit scary. You know, these guys are going around here 100 mile an hour for 90 minutes and they're absolutely rattling each other. And it's just something that a lot of the guys from those leagues aren't maybe used to. You know, and it takes a bit of getting used to.
Yeah, I used to have 5 seconds and now I only have two.
big
change. Well, listen, pleasure having you on. Not the full panel as always. We're blaming it on WhatsApp. We're putting it out on WhatsApp, Instagram and Facebook. Zuckerberg, it's your fault tonight that we didn't have a panel. But that's
And if Graham Souness is watching, he'll probably tell you it was all Pogba's fault. But listen, that's another night at the office.
Absolutely. But listen, a pleasure having you on. As always, this is your Monday mashup on the Monday night on the Upper Tier Podcast. Head over to YouTube, Dynamo Podcast Network. Drop a like, share, subscribe, whatever you need to do there to keep us growing. Drop your comments into the episode. Let us know what you think. I know I'll probably get a lot of grief on my background, but I just couldn't resist. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, the Upper Tier. And if you want to hit us up on Twitter, I should say, because it's the only one that's up at the moment, at the _upper_tier. And you'll get the audio version of the show, of course, on Spotify, Podbean, iTunes, wherever you pick up audio version show. My man, a pleasure.
Thanks, brother.
Cheers.